Good morning, everyone. Let me call the meeting to order. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on August 5th, 2010. Welcome to those of you who've joined us today, both in person and listening to the webcast. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to adopt auditing standards that would update the requirements for assessing and responding to risk during an audit. In addition, the board will consider a recommendation to issue a release on the provision in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act authorizing the board to impose disciplinary sanctions on registered accounting firms and their supervisory personnel who fail reasonably to supervise associated persons. Before we proceed with the specific agenda items, I'll note for the record that all members of the board are present for today's meeting. The first order of business before the board today is a staff recommendation that the board adopt auditing standards that would update our existing standards on risk assessment. To present the staff's recommendation on this agenda item, I'll turn to our chief auditor, Martin Bauman. Mr. Bauman.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. The Office of the Chief Auditor is pleased to recommend to the board 8 auditing standards and amendments related to the auditor's assessment of and response to risks in an audit. A robust risk assessment process is vital to performing audits that protect investors. Risk underlines the entire audit process because risk assessments drive the auditor's testing of controls and testing of the accounts and disclosures in the financial statements. These new standards establish requirements that enhance the effectiveness of auditors' identification and assessment of the risk of material misstatement in an audit. Unlike the interim standards, the new risk assessment standards set forth a risk assessment process that prompts the auditor to connect the dots to identify and appropriately analyze the risks of misstatements due to error or fraud in the financial statement. Standards also require the auditor to obtain evidence that provides a reasonable basis for his or her risk assessment. It is also important for auditors to conduct their audits to properly address the risks they identify. A number of audit deficiencies identified in inspection relate to failures to respond to risks in the financial statement. The new risk assessment standards require the auditor to address the risks of material misstatement of the financial statements through the overall conduct of the engagement and through specific procedures that are tailored to the risks in the financial statements. Auditors are required to document how they have responded to the risks they identified and assessed. Substantive tests of the accounts and disclosures are required to be commensurate with the risks of material misstatement in the relevant assertions of significant accounts and disclosures. Additional steps are required to address significant risks, which are those risks that require special audit consideration. The requirements for testing controls in the financial statement audits have been updated so that they are closely aligned with the audit of internal control over financial reporting, while giving auditors of non-accelerated filers the same flexibility in testing controls that they had under the interim standards being replaced. Another deficiency observed in inspections is a failure to adequately consider negative evidence that should have raised questions about amounts and disclosures in the financial statements. These risk assessment standards require the auditor to consider all of the evidence, both positive and negative, in forming the opinion on the financial statements. The new standard on evaluating audit results sets forth a process for accumulating and evaluating that evidence, which should prompt auditors to make a more thorough and objective evaluation of the evidence obtained during the audit to make sure that the auditor's opinion is supported by the evidence. Of particular importance to investors, these risk assessment standards emphasize the auditor's responsibilities for consideration of fraud by incorporating the requirements for identifying and responding to the fraud risks and evaluating audit results from AU Section 316. The board's inspections have identified deficiencies that suggest that some auditors may view the consideration of fraud as an isolated, mechanical process rather than an integral part of the audit. Incorporating the requirements for identifying and responding to fraud risks in these standards makes clear that the auditor's responsibilities for assessing and responding to fraud risks are an integral part of the audit process rather than a separate, parallel process. It also benefits investors by prompting auditors to make a more thoughtful and thorough assessment of fraud risks and to develop appropriate audit responses. CalPERS, in particular, supported this approach in their comments, saying, "We continue to support the approach the board has taken with consideration of fraud and agree that this section will reinforce to the auditor the importance of performing a thorough evaluation of risks of material misstatement due to fraud as an integral part of the audit process." These risk assessment standards reflect many other improvements over the interim standards that they replace. For example, these standards contain expanded requirements related to evaluating bias in the financial statements. Also, these standards contain additional requirements regarding consideration of the risks of omitted, incomplete, or inaccurate disclosures in the financial statements and updated requirements for evaluating the adequacy of disclosures in the financial statements. These requirements are especially important in light of the critical role of estimates and disclosures in financial reporting today. These new risk assessment standards replace six of the board's interim auditing standards and cover many fundamental aspects of the audit, such as audit planning, the engagement partner's responsibilities for supervision of the audit engagement, consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit, identifying and assessing risk of material misstatement, responding to the assessed risks, and evaluating audit results. The new standards will serve as the foundation for future standards. For example, the recently proposed standard on confirmation has additional requirements regarding significant risks, and these risk assessment standards establish the requirements for determining significant risks. Other important standard-setting projects on which we are actively working, such as the projects on the use of specialists and on the use of other auditors, will build on the core principles in these standards. These risk assessment standards have been developed with valuable assistance from our colleagues in the Office of General Counsel, Inspections, Enforcement, and Research and Analysis. For example, from the early stages of this project, we have worked with our Inspections Division to understand the issues they are observing in practice so we can take them into account in developing these standards. We have also benefited significantly from their advice on necessary improvements to the standards, and we appreciate their support. I'm pleased to add that the Inspections Division has told us that they believe these standards are of high quality, will improve audits, and appropriately reflect Inspection Division findings and comments. These standards have also benefited from public comments. The risk assessment standards were initially proposed by the board in October 2008, and were re-proposed by the board in December 2009. These standards reflect many refinements based on comments received on those proposals. For example, in commenting on the re-proposal, the Institute of Internal Auditors said, "We applaud the PCAOB's revisions to these originally proposed standards. We believe these standards to be of high quality, and the changes in the draft, as advocated by many respondents, have aided in the improvement of such standards." Now, I would like to turn the floor over to Keith Wilson to discuss each of these standards in more detail and highlight some of the important new requirements in the standards. Before I do, I'd like to express my appreciation to Keith Wilson, Jessica Watt, Deanne Jules, Hasnat Ahmad, Hang Zhao, and Leslie Guyvers of the Office of the Chief Auditor, who were all important members of the team that helped develop these standards, and to Bob Burns and Nina Mojiri-Azad of the Office of General Counsel for their valuable advice and contributions. Finally, I'd like to thank the staff of the Securities and Exchange Commission who provided timely and helpful assistance and advice. Steve?
Thank you, Marty. Mr. Chairman and board members, as Marty mentioned, the recommendation before you consists of 8 auditing standards and related amendments to PCAOB standards. The 8 standards are audit risk, which discusses the concepts and components of audit risk, audit planning, which describes the auditor's responsibilities for planning the audit, supervision of the audit engagement, which describes the responsibilities of the engagement partner and other members of the engagement team who assist the engagement partner for supervising the audit engagement, including supervising the work of the engagement team. Consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit, which describes how the concept of materiality should be applied when planning and performing audit procedures. Identifying and assessing risks of material misstatement, which describes the auditor's responsibilities for performing procedures to identify risks of material misstatement and the process of assessing those risks. The auditor's responses to the risks of material misstatement, which describes how the auditor should tailor the overall conduct of the audit and his or her audit procedures to respond to the risks of material misstatement. Evaluating audit results, which describes the process for evaluating the evidence obtained during the audit to form the opinions to be expressed in the auditor's report. And finally, audit evidence, which describes how the auditor should perform audit procedures to obtain sufficient, appropriate evidence to support his or her opinion. Generally, commenters on the reproposed standards were supportive of those standards. The overwhelming majority of the comments on the standards were suggestions for refinements and clarifications rather than objections to the fundamental requirements of the standards. The staff has analyzed each of the comments, and the standards before you today reflect improvements to the standards in light of comments received. I will discuss noteworthy changes to the standards, which were primarily in response to comments on the reproposed standards. In the audit risk standard, the discussion of the components of audit risk has been expanded in 2 respects in light of comments and observations of audit practice, for example, from inspections. First, a paragraph was added to describe what the auditor does to assess inherent and control risk, which are the 2 components of the risk of material misstatement. Second, the standard emphasizes the importance of performing substantive procedures of accounts and disclosures that reduce detection risk to a level that's appropriate for the risk of material misstatement. Regarding the audit planning standard, the reproposed risk standards include a standard covering both audit planning and supervision. Some commenters suggested dividing audit planning and supervision into separate standards. After consideration of these comments, planning and supervision were divided into separate standards because they are distinct activities. In the section of the planning standard regarding multi-location engagements, some commenters asked how the requirements in that section would be applied to situations in which the financial statements of certain business units were audited by other auditors, and the principal auditor uses the work of the other auditor in accordance with AU Section 543. The audit planning standard was revised to explain specifically how the requirements would be applied in those situations. In addition, in light of comments received, the requirement to vary procedures at locations from year to year was removed from the planning standard and included in the requirements in the auditor's response standard to incorporate an element of unpredictability in the audit. However, it should be noted that the requirement in auditing standard number 5 for varying tests of locations continues to apply to integrated audits. The planning standard also discusses planning considerations related to using a person with specialized skill or knowledge on the engagement. The standard requires the auditor to determine whether the use of such specialists is necessary for the audit. The standard also imposes requirements regarding the auditor's knowledge of the subject matter of the specialist's work, so the auditor cannot simply outsource work to a specialist merely because he or she doesn't have knowledge of the specialized area. Commenters generally supported the expanded requirements for specialists, which are broader than the requirements in the interim planning standard that were limited to the use of IT specialists. Regarding the supervision standard, in connection with dividing the audit planning and supervision into separate standards, the description of some of the supervision requirements also was revised to make them more direct and easier to understand by the engagement partner and others on the engagement team who assist the engagement partner with supervision. However, these revisions do not fundamentally change the responsibilities for supervision as compared to the respective requirements in the reproposed standard, either in the nature of the required supervisory activities or the extent of supervision needed. The new supervision standard is entitled Supervision of the Audit Engagement because the standard says that the engagement partner is responsible for the performance of the audit engagement. The standard explains that those responsibilities include supervising the work of engagement team members, which is the primary focus of the standard, and for compliance with PCOB standards in matters such as using the work of specialists, other auditors, internal auditors, and others who are involved in testing control. The standard does not change the existing requirements regarding auditors' use of specialists, other auditors, internal auditors, and others who are not part of the engagement team. Those persons would continue to be covered by other PCOB standards, that is, AU Section 336, 543, 322, and Auditing Standard Number 5, respectively. The new supervision standard does, however, emphasize certain key points about supervision. For example, that the engagement partner is responsible for the engagement and its performance. Even if one or more engagement team members assist with supervision, the engagement partner remains responsible. Also, both the engagement partner and any other engagement team member to perform supervision activities must comply with the requirements of the standard. The extent of supervision also should be commensurate with the risk of material misstatement. That is, the higher the risk, the greater the extent of supervision needed. And the work of the engagement team members should be reviewed to evaluate whether the work was performed and documented, the objections of the work were met, and the results of the work support the conclusions reached. Turning to the standard on consideration of materiality, that standard is aligned closely with the concept of materiality as articulated by the courts in interpreting the federal securities laws. This is important because it emphasizes matters that would affect the judgment of a reasonable investor. Some of the language in the standard has been refined to clarify that the auditor establishes a materiality level for the financial statements as a whole in order to plan and perform audit procedures. The standard also includes requirements for the auditor to establish materiality levels for particular accounts and disclosures when necessary, for example, based on consideration of qualitative factors. This latter requirement is a significant improvement over the interim standards because it focuses the auditor on those accounts for which misstatements might be especially meaningful to investors. The risk assessment standards emphasize that the established materiality level should be reevaluated during the course of the audit if circumstances warrant. The auditor cannot use that materiality level established for planning as the sole basis for evaluating uncorrected misstatements without also considering relevant qualitative and quantitative factors. In the requirements for multi-location engagements, the terminology in the standard has been revised to refer to tolerable misstatement at an individual location or business unit rather than materiality. The reason for that is because the principle related to this requirement is really more similar to that for determining tolerable misstatement at the account level. The requirements for reevaluating materiality levels and tolerable misstatement during the audit have been revised as compared to the reproposed standard to make them simpler and to add some examples of situations in which reevaluation would be necessary. In the identifying and assessing risk standard, this standard is particularly important because it requires the auditor to obtain evidence that provides a reasonable basis for risk assessment, which in turn, as Marty mentioned, drives the auditor's testing of controls, testing of significant accounts and disclosures. In integrated audits, the risk assessments resulting from this standard affect both the audit of the financial statements and the audit of internal control over financial reporting. That said, the standard also applies to audits of financial statements only, for example, audits of non-accelerated filers. The standard is scalable based on the company's size and complexity. More work is needed to identify and assess risks in a larger and more complex company than in a smaller and less complex company. The risk assessment process in the standard includes procedures to identify and assess risks of material misstatements. This process is more comprehensive than the requirements in the interim standard because it looks more extensively at the internal and external factors that can affect the risks of errors or fraud. Also, the standard includes procedures that focus specifically on risks of omitted, incomplete, or inaccurate disclosures. For example, when obtaining an understanding of the company's selection and application of accounting principles, the auditor is required to develop expectations about the disclosures that would be necessary for the financial statements to be presented fairly in conformity with the applicable financial reporting framework. Also, the auditor is required to consider the risk of omitted, incomplete, or inaccurate disclosures when conducting a discussion among engagement team members about the risk of fraud and when assessing fraud risk. After consideration of comments on the re-proposed standard, the following changes were made to the standard. The standard requires the auditor to consider performing certain additional risk assessment procedures as part of obtaining an understanding of the nature of the company and its environment, such as reading relevant public information about the company, observing or reading transcripts of earnings calls, obtaining an understanding of compensation arrangements with senior management, and obtaining information about trading activity in the company's securities and holdings in the company's securities by significant holders. The standard was revised to clarify that this requirement also includes determining the extent of such procedures. The requirement regarding consideration of disclosures were clarified to refer to disclosures necessary for the fair presentation of the financial statements in conformity with the applicable financial reporting framework. Also, the requirements regarding obtaining an understanding of the company's control activities were revised to use the language in the pre-existing interim standard to clarify and emphasize that there is no intention to change the requirements in this area. And finally, the discussion of identifying significant risks was expanded to specifically discuss consideration of the nature of the risk and the likelihood and potential magnitude of misstatements resulting from the risk. Turning now to the auditor's response standard, that standard requires the auditor to address the risk of material misstatement in both the overall conduct of the engagement, such as in staffing, supervision, evaluating potential bias in management selection and application of accounting principles, and in the specific audit procedures performed. The standard says that the auditor must design and implement audit responses that address the risk of material misstatement identified and assessed in accordance with the standard on identifying and assessing risks of material misstatement. The auditor's response standard imposes additional requirements for significant risks, including procedures that are specifically responsive to the risk, detailed testing of the affected accounts and disclosures, and further procedures necessary to address fraud risk. Related amendments to auditing standard number 3 require the auditor to document the risk assessment and the way that the auditor has responded to those risks in the audit. After consideration of comments on the re-proposed standard, the following changes were made to the response standard. An explanation and examples were added in the provisions related to determining whether it's necessary to make pervasive changes to the nature, timing, and extent of audit procedures as part of the overall responses. Also clarified the requirements regarding the use of evidence from past audits when evaluating the effectiveness of controls in a financial statement audit. The evaluating audit results standard sets forth a process that prompts the auditor to make a thorough and objective evaluation of the audit results, considering matters that support the assertions in the financial statements, as well as evidence that calls into question those assertions. The standard also contains more robust requirements regarding the auditor's evaluation of bias in the financial statements. After consideration of comments on the re-proposed standards, the wording of the requirement to evaluate disclosures as part of evaluating the overall presentation of the financial statements was revised to align more closely with a parallel requirement in AU 508 on auditor's report. Another subject of comment on this standard was the definition of the term misstatement in the financial statement. The definition in the re-proposed standard states that a misstatement, if material individually or in combination with other misstatements, causes the financial statements not to be presented fairly in conformity with the applicable financial reporting framework. Some commenters said that the definition actually applied to material misstatements. The definition was not changed because it does not define material misstatement. Rather, it emphasizes that a misstatement, setting aside materiality considerations, prevents the financial statements from being presented fairly in conformity with U.S. GAAP or other applicable financial reporting frameworks. This would include not only departures from GAAP, but also management bias and omission of information essential for the fair presentation of the financial statements. These points are discussed further in the accompanying release. The final standard on audit evidence states that the auditor must plan and perform the audit to obtain sufficient appropriate evidence to provide a reasonable basis for his or her opinion. It then sets forth principles for evaluating and determining the sufficiency and appropriateness of audit evidence, which is fundamental to the audit process. There were few comments on this standard, none that warranted fundamental changes to the standard. However, in light of the board's proposed new standard on confirmations, the description of confirmation procedures in the audit evidence standard was revised to describe confirmation in a more general way, with the intention of revisiting this description and making conforming amendments as necessary when completing the confirmation project. The staff recommends that the board adopt the 8 auditing standards regarding the auditor's assessment of and response to risk and related amendments to BCOB standards. We will be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bauman and Mr. Wilson. Let me turn to my fellow board members and ask if there are any motions concerning this matter.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Harris.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board adopt the standards on risk assessment and propose conforming amendments to the board's standards as recommended and instruct the staff to submit them to the SEC for approval pursuant to Section 107 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act.
Thank you very much. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Gradison. Let me start with some comments of my own about these proposals. Identifying the risks of material misstatement and planning and performing an audit that properly addresses those risks is essential to affording investors reasonable assurance that the financial statements on which they rely are free of material error. Assessing and responding to risk is at the core of what auditors do. The board's mandate is to ensure quality auditing and to promote investor confidence in audited financial statements. Therefore, focusing on the risk assessment process and the auditor's response to risk is one of the most important steps we can take to fulfill our statutory mandate. The road that brought us to final adoption of the 8 risk assessment standards the board is considering today has been long. In their first incarnation, these standards were published in October of 2008. Based on comments received on those proposals, the board issued revised standards for further comment in December 2009. The board's standing advisory group has also publicly discussed risk assessment on several occasions during the past 3 years. While the process has been lengthy, the issues are important, and I believe that the final suite of standards is substantially stronger and its 2008 predecessor as a result of the input we've received. Some observers have urged us to afford still more opportunities for public participation in our standard setting, and I hope that we'll continue to experiment with concept releases, multiple proposal periods, SAG discussions, and other opportunities for feedback, such as roundtables and working groups. The changes to the reproposed standards that are reflected in the final version before the board today are more in the nature of refinements than new conceptual directions. However, there are 3 features that I think are worth highlighting. First, in the final standards, planning and supervision have been separated, and each is embodied in its own standard. In my view, this makes sense because it underscores the central role that supervision plays in auditing. A separate supervision standard also affords a better platform for future development of the concept of supervision. In our inspections program, we see, not infrequently, audit breakdowns that are traceable to poor supervision of the engagement team or of other aspects of the engagement, such as the use of specialists. While the content of the new supervision standard, auditing standard number 10, is not radically different than the supervision requirements of AU 311, the adoption of auditing standard number 10 gives us a vehicle to address in the future weaknesses and deficiencies that our inspections uncover in this area. Second, the new standalone auditing planning standard, auditing standard number 9, has been revised to take into account multi-location engagements in which part of the work is performed by other auditors. The use of other auditors in cross-border audits has been a hot topic recently, and the board issued audit practice alert number 6 on problems in that area several weeks ago. However, most of the guidance on multi-location audits in auditing standard number 9 relates to determining the level of audit risk at the various locations in which the company operates and to determining where to perform audit work. As in the case of supervision, we're considering further standard setting regarding the use of other auditors in light of the problems the board has found in its inspections and described in the practice alert. I think it's important that we move ahead with that project promptly. Third, the final standard contains refinements to the requirements relating to the auditor's evaluation of whether the financial statements contain all of the information essential for a fair presentation in conformity with the applicable financial reporting framework. Disclosures beyond simply the numbers on the face of the financial statements have become increasingly important to meaningful financial reporting. The risk assessment standards underscore that the auditor's responsibilities extend to those disclosures and that the risk that the disclosures will be incomplete or misstated needs to be considered as part of planning and performing an audit and evaluating the results. I believe these 8 standards will improve audit quality, and I support their adoption. Of course, most firms' audit processes already incorporate risk-based methodologies, and the changes to audit manuals and staff training needed to implement these standards should not be overwhelming. Nonetheless, I think the new risk assessment standards are a significant step forward in promoting sophisticated audit risk assessment and minimizing the risk that the audit will fail to detect material misstatements. As you noted, Marty, many people have been involved in this project over the past several years. I'd like to specifically acknowledge your contributions, Marty, as the board's chief auditor, and members of your staff, including Jessica Watts, Hasnat Ahmad, Diana Jules, Huang Zhao. Without their efforts and those of Bob Burns, Nina Mojari-Assad, and other staff in the Office of the General Counsel, risk assessment would still be on the drawing board. Finally, saving the best for last, I want to recognize the work of Deputy Chief Auditor Keith Wilson. Keith has been both the main theoretician and the lead draftsman on this project since the beginning. Keith, thanks for all your hard work. I'm sure you're glad to see these standards finally crossing the finish line and are probably more than ready to move on to other projects at this point. Let me ask the other board members if they have comments or questions. I think I'll start with the moving party, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the board's adoption of these 8 standards and the related amendments which clarify and strengthen the requirements for auditors to assess and respond to the risks of material misstatements and financial statements. As you, Mr. Chairman, and others have mentioned this morning, these standards were initially proposed almost 2 years ago on October 21st, 2008, and were re-proposed on December 17th, 2009. I would again like to thank those who took the time to review the proposed standards and provide their comments to the board. As I have said before, this feedback is most helpful in ensuring that the board considered the concerns of all interested parties. It also results in standards that better align with the needs of investors. As stated by Ann Simpson, Senior Portfolio Manager of CalPERS, in her March 1, 2010 comment letter, quote, the financial interests of investors are most effectively served in an environment where investors can confidently utilize financial statements to evaluate the risk and reward of an investment. Auditors play a key role in decreasing the risk of material misstatements in financial reports. An effective audit process provides the investor with assurance that the financial statements present reliable and valid information which conforms to generally accepted accounting principles. By adopting these standards, the board furthers its mission, quote, to protect the interest of investors, close quote, in several important ways. These standards replace requirements developed in the 1980s with audit procedures that more effectively respond to today's complex financial reporting environment. They help to protect investors by providing a clear articulation of the auditor's responsibilities to assess and respond to the risk of material misstatement in financial statements. They address the concept of materiality and the need for the auditor to consider both quantitative and qualitative factors in establishing materiality levels. The standards further articulate that both quantitative and qualitative factors should include, among other things, consideration of circumstances that would, quote, influence the judgment of a reasonable investor, close quote. Clarifying the auditor's responsibility to consider the risk of financial reporting fraud during an audit has long been a priority for investors, and these standards, as Marty Bauman mentioned, recognize the need to elevate and integrate the auditor's consideration of fraud in every aspect of planning, conducting and evaluating the results of an audit. And incorporating these requirements makes clear that the auditor's responsibilities for assessing and responding to fraud risks are an integral part of the audit process rather than a separate parallel process. As I stated, when the standards were reproposed last year, these standards directly and effectively address the requirements for auditors to evaluate the adequacy of financial statement disclosures. The PCAOB's interim standards addressed this area to a limited extent, but our inspections process has continued to raise concerns about the effectiveness of the auditor's review of disclosures. Given the feedback from our inspectors, I believe that clarifying the auditor's requirement to evaluate the adequacy of financial statement disclosures serves the needs and expectations of investors. Another important issue for investors in these standards is the heightened focus on executive compensation. Auditing standard number 12, identifying and assessing risk of material misstatement, states that the auditor is to obtain an understanding of a company and the activities that might have an effect on the risk of a misstatement in the company's financial statement. The standard also says that this means, when necessary, the auditor is to obtain an understanding of compensation arrangements with senior management, including incentive compensation arrangements, changes or adjustments to those arrangements, and special bonuses. The standard includes examples of performance measures that might affect the risks of material misstatement, such as measures that form the basis for contractual commitments or incentive compensation arrangements. Taken together, these statements indicate that auditors need to be aware of situations in which compensation arrangements for senior management pose risks of material misstatement of the financial statements. As with the emphasis on fraud, investor groups have supported such a heightened focus on executive compensation. In response to recommendations from commentators, this set of standards divides the audit planning and supervision standard into two standards. This change, however, does not affect the auditor's responsibilities for planning the audit and for supervising the work of the engagement team members. The separate standard on supervision describes the responsibilities of the engagement partner and engagement team members who assist in supervising the audit to ensure that the work performed is as directed and supports the conclusions reached. As you, and I believe Charlie Niemeyer, will mention, this supervision standard may very well need further refinement as the board continues its evaluation of the existing interim audit standards and completes other standard-setting activities. I commend the staff on providing a comparison of these risk assessment standards to analogous standards of other standard setters. While this comparison helps identify differences between the standards, I encourage the staff to improve the value of this comparison by more clearly describing how the board's requirements protect the interest of U.S. investors as compared to similar standards issued by other standard-setting bodies. With the adoption of these risk assessment standards, the board is making essential improvements over the current PCAOB interim standards. These eight standards describe the board's expectations of what the auditor needs to do to incorporate risk assessment principles into the planning and performance of an audit. In short, these standards focus the auditor's efforts on those areas that have the greatest risk of creating an audit failure, and with their adoption, I believe the board significantly furthers its goal to protect the interest of investors in the preparation of informative, accurate, and independent audit reports. And, Mr. Chairman, I also join with you in commending the fine work of all the staff who have been involved in this process, and especially you, Keith. So thank you very much for getting this behind you, and Marty as well.
Thank you. Mr. Gradison, you seconded the motion. Are there any comments you'd like to make?
Indeed I do, Mr. Chairman. I want to join with my colleagues in thanking the staff and congratulating them on a really signal accomplishment. These are truly, as Marty said, foundational standards. And in addition to the substance of them, in a sense, in one stroke, we are about doubling the number of standards that have been issued by the board to replace the interim standards, which were adopted back way back in 2003. I think that's very important. I think the board, through the efforts of the standards staff, is really accelerating the pace of its work. And I think that is very much in the interest of investors, specifically that we move as quickly as possible away from the interim standards, which the profession itself has been moving away with, through actions of the Auditing Standards Board. I have nothing further to say that would add to the valuable comments already made by my colleagues.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gradison. Mr. Niemeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Gelder. I also appreciate all the hard work the staff has put into this project. I am certain that no one is happier to see this day than you are. I do support the revisions, which in many respects I believe represent improvements over existing standards. But it is not without hesitation in some areas. I am concerned that we have missed an opportunity to fix some weaknesses in our standards that are apparent from inspections and other oversight. To best protect investors, future projects should better integrate insights from inspections into standards. My main concern lies with the new auditing standard number 10, which is essentially a renumbering of AU 311 on planning and supervision. This project began several years ago with certain modest changes to the planning section of the standard to align planning with other risk assessment standards. After the first proposal, some commenters appropriately pointed out that good auditing requires planning for and using specialist resources to address risk, especially risk associated with complex transactions. Moreover, commenters noted that the general provisions in the proposal do not adequately address the risk associated with supervising individuals with specialized skills. Let me step back for a moment to explain why this is important. The existing standards and today's reorganized standards handle use of specialists in an odd way. Technically, certain kinds of specialists, namely tax specialists and IT specialists, plus any specialist that is employed by the audit firm, are covered by AU 311 and must be supervised as members of the engagement team. Other specialists are covered by AU 336, including externally engaged specialists in evaluation of financial instruments. There's no rhyme or reason to this grouping. Neither standard protects investors well. Auditing standard number 10 should include more specific requirements for auditor supervision of specialists, since it continues to implicitly cover supervision of internal specialists. And while AU 336 is more specific, it is weak. As our inspections have shown, many firms recognize that more robust oversight of specialists is necessary to meet the requirement to obtain reasonable assurance that the financial statements are free of misstatement. This leads me to a broader point. To adequately protect investors, the PCAOB simply must focus its standard-setting initiatives on addressing weaknesses identified in our inspections and other oversight activities. Based on nearly 7 years of inspections, there are two principal areas of weakness in our standards. The first is the firm's failure to properly use specialists. The second is firms' failure to use other auditors, including affiliates in the global network, in a manner that leads to obtaining reasonable assurance that the financial statements are free of material misstatement. Fixing these two areas is now urgent. As we've discussed, many
standing advisory group meetings in the past, as well as other venues, the FASB's move toward more use of fair value in accounting has made valuation a core competency required for auditors. The firms have invested in considerable training and infrastructure to meet this new challenge, but as I've described, PCAOB standards have not kept up. Improving the reliability of multinational audits is also critical. Like AU 311, auditing standard number 10 continues to apply unless the auditor can satisfy the conditions to use AU 543, which does not impose the same supervisory duties as would apply to auditors who are technically considered part of the engagement team. This model is anything but seamless and does not serve investors well. And indeed, the risk to investors of weaknesses in supervising such audits is enormous. While I am disappointed that we have not corrected these flaws in reorganizing the standards, in many respects, as I've said, I think the new standards and the reorganization are improvements. I also think we have learned a tremendous amount about what we need to do to address the problem areas, and I hope we will turn to doing so in short order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Niemeyer. Let me, if I could, ask you a couple questions that may bring out some of these points. And first, I think several of us have said that these are foundational standards. There's been a lot of emphasis in the discussion this morning about the importance of risk assessment and corollary planning and supervision to the success of the audit. And at the same time, I think several of us commented, I commented, that the major firms' audit methodologies do already incorporate concepts of risk assessment. I wonder if you can give some sense of how much you think the adoption of these standards will, in practical terms, impact the way that auditing is currently performed.